The stock market, well, it is soaring right now, but it doesn't mean that it's the time to kick back and put your feet up. You're listening to Simply Money Tonight. I'm Amy Wagner along with Steve Sprovac. You know, smooth sailing for so many can be scarier than choppy waters, right? We heard from so many of you last year in February and March when the market was, you know, tanking. But we're also hearing from you now that the market's doing really well. Joining us tonight, Andy Stout, CFA, Chief Investment Officer at Allworth Financial, you know, guiding a mere $10 billion right here in Cincinnati. Andy, it is funny, right? We get scared when the market tanks, but we also get scared when it does really well.
Well, I would say we get greedy when it does really well, and that's the exact wrong thing to do. I mean, I think Warren Buffett had it right when he said, you want to be greedy when others are fearful and fearful when others are greedy.
Yet fear and greed, you're right, I think are two of the major game changers when it comes to your money.
Yeah, and you, to your point, the fear, I think it's more when things are going well, it's a fear of missing out, right? So that's that greed. So there is the fear of missing out. You don't want to be wondering like, oh, if I would have invested, I'd have so much money. And then, but markets are at record tops and you're thinking, well, it can only keep going higher. Well, there's always some volatility, some, you know, right around the corner. You just don't know when, you don't know how much, but there will be market turbulence.
Andy, but it's hard not to be optimistic. I mean, we're getting first quarter GDP numbers in that are spectacular. Second quarter estimates are even higher. I mean, talk a little bit about how well the economy is improving, and should we be this optimistic?
From an economic standpoint, the optimism is absolutely warranted. We saw the U.S. economy increase 6.4% in the first quarter, and that's really good, especially if you consider at the beginning of the year, a lot of economists were thinking we might only see growth of 1 to 2%. But, you know, we had two pretty massive stimulus bills get passed, one in late December and one in mid-March. That pushed $2,000 out to millions of Americans, which resulted in them spending a ton of money. I mean, we saw consumer spending increase almost 11% in the first quarter. So that's a really strong quarter. And when we look ahead, you're right, Steve, the second quarter should be stronger than the first, and that should actually push the total size of the U.S. economy back to where it was before the crisis began.
Andy, that's mind-boggling when you think about it, because you think about how well the economy was going back in December of 2019. And in June, we could be back up to that level. It's crazy how fast it appears that we've recovered from this. And I think a lot of one thing that everyone's keeping an eye on, too, is job recovery at the same time, which appears to be, would you say, on track?
Well, not as on track as the total economic recovery, because we're still about 8.4 million jobs shy of where we were when the crisis began. So there's still a lot of room to make up. What I call that is it's called labor market slack. And when we look ahead to the monthly jobs report for April, we're going to get that data here on Friday. Right now, economists are expecting, this is a big number, 980,000 new jobs were added last month. That's what's expected. We'll see what it actually comes in at, but that's a really big number.
Well, these are great economic numbers, but we don't buy the economy. I mean, you know, if you're investing in the stock market, you care more about what stock prices are. And unfortunately, stocks are never cheap when the news is really good. So, you know, we've got this great news, but stock prices are at record highs. What do you tell an investor who has money that wants to invest at least some of it, and it is for the long term? Is this a good time to put money to work in the stock market?
I don't know if I would ever say now is a bad time, because I'm a bit of a quantitative stats nerd, whatever you want to call me. So I'll look at the statistics. Since 1950, stocks are higher, large cap stocks measured by the S&P 500, they're higher about 93% of the time over every five-year rolling period. So that tells you, you put some money in here, look at it 5 years later, 93% of the time, stocks are higher. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that very few people can regularly predict that 7% of the time when stocks won't be higher. Now, that doesn't mean there won't be market turbulence. There absolutely will be. I mean, that just kind of goes without saying. That's the cost of investing. But longer term, the odds are in your favor. But I would say, Steve, rather than just like, you know, putting money to work or whatever, I would say make sure what I would say to that investor is make sure you have the right investment mix, that stock bond allocation, and then figure out what you need for your retirement and stick to it and don't let your emotions make you have any sort of bad decisions. You don't want to like buy at tops and sell at bottoms. You want to get your plan and stick true to it.
You're listening to Simply Money tonight here on 55 KRC as we look at the economy. Really, there's nowhere that you can look right now that has major red flags up. And as you look at corporate earnings, too, Andy, it seems to be kind of moving full steam ahead. Companies, I know we're in the, kind of wrapping up earnings season, and it's been like a record earnings season.
Yeah, it's been really good. We've had about 60% of large cap companies report profits, and the results are just, they're mind-boggling, they're eye-popping. Heading into earnings season, Wall Street analysts were thinking that the year-over-year earnings growth would be 24%. So in other words, earnings in the first quarter of 2021 compared to the first quarter of 2020. 24% growth, it's a big number. Obviously, yeah. The first quarter was shut down. It's an impact. Where they're actually coming in at is 46% higher on a year-over-year basis, and a staggering 88% of large-cap companies have beaten analysts' estimates. So once this earnings season is over, it's highly likely that we will have had the best quarter ever for corporate profits.
Hey, Andy, you haven't talked about inflation, and I've been getting questions from people that I work with about that. The Federal Reserve is buying about $120 billion a month of bonds, and they seem to want to continue doing that. The balance sheet right now with the Federal Reserve is over $7 trillion, and we're finally seeing signs of inflation. Are you worried, or do you think this is just a transient period?
No, I think there is some risk to inflation. I don't think anyone can deny there aren't risks. There's never a set in stone which way it's going to go. I mean, you got to think of the probabilities. There is some risk to inflation. I do think it is manageable. To your point, the Fed has a huge balance sheet, $7.8 trillion. They're buying $120 billion worth of bonds. It's $80 billion in treasuries, $40 billion in mortgage-backed securities. Rates are near zero. We've just put massive amounts of stimulus, trillions of dollars, into the economy. Now, when we look at what's going on, we do see some inflation numbers start to tick up. The Fed's preferred inflation measure for the month of March showed prices were 2.3% higher on a year-over-year basis. That's above the Fed's target of 2%. Now, the Fed wants that to average 2%, so we could be above 2% for a while, and the Fed won't care really, really too much, because what the Fed is doing, Federal Reserve controls our short-term interest rates, our nation's central bank. They're wanting to keep policy as accommodative as possible because they don't think we're quite on the path to a full recovery. They want to see a lot more a string of jobs close to a million, what we might get this month. And when I think about inflation in general, yeah, I think we probably see now over the next few months some of the highest numbers we've seen in years, in all honesty. But longer, and that's part of it, partly because we're comparing a time on a year-over-year basis to a time last year when the economy was shut down. So it's no shock to me that prices are higher. But long-term, I do think that inflation's manageable for four main reasons. Technological efficiency, lack of deglobalization, poor demographics. For example, the birth replacement ratio is 2.1 births per woman. We're at 1.8. That puts a cap on population growth, and the cap on population growth puts a cap on economic growth, by the way. That's just the math behind it. And the fourth thing is that millions of Americans that are going to be hired over the next few months because of the reopening, that's going to be concentrated in the restaurants and concentrated at retailers, and they're just not going to have much negotiating power to demand higher wages. So the bottom line is, I think it's manageable. There is upside risks. There's no question about it. And I do think we see some high numbers over the next few months, but I think it's going to come down maybe in the fourth quarter, and then 2022 and 2023, we're back to around 2%.
Well, and I don't disagree with you, but at $120 billion of purchases each and every month, they're going to have to tone it down at some point, which, you know, everybody calls tapering, just not buying as much. And I'm even seeing some members of the Fed saying, yeah, by the end of this year, we're going to have to slow down the amount of purchases we make. Don't you think that that's going to rock the markets a little bit? I mean, you know, part of the reason that this market has been so strong is that the Federal Reserve has been keeping interest rates lower through these bond purchases. Isn't that the case?
Yeah, if we look back to 2013, there was something there was something very similar. It was called a taper tantrum, where right. the Fed said, hey, we're going to stop buying bonds. And what happened with the market, you saw rates spike. Remember, rates, interest rates, and bond prices move in opposite directions like a teeter-totter. One goes up, the other goes down. So we did see rates jump up, which had an impact, negative impact on the bond market. And we also saw what you're talking about right here, where we did see a short-term stock sell-off. And I say short-term because 2017, by the way, you still had the S&P 500 have about almost around a 30% return for the year. Still ended up being a good return. But you did see roughly 15% or so pullback in the market. I mean, you saw a big downdraft because of that. So volatility, it absolutely could happen when the Fed does look to taper or reduce their bond purchases, which I think, you know, it could happen later this year when they start to talk about it, third quarter, fourth quarter. You know, I think that's probably coming down the pike.
All right. So, Andy, quickly, as you step back and look at the state of the economy, the stock market right now, what is your advice to investors?
Have a game plan. Stick to it. You want to know what amount of money you need for retirement. And you need to know what your investment mix needs to be to meet those goals. And once you have that investment mix figured out, don't get cute. Rebalance from time to time if you get off of your target stock bond allocation. But when you get too cute and you start to make decisions, you make them with your emotions. And emotional decisions, they're usually bad ones.
Great advice. Here's a Simply Money point. When the stock market is on a tear, it is time to prepare your investments for the next storm, because one will always come. Okay, so Kroger wants to send a drone to your door, you know, whatever you need. Is this the future of home delivery? Crazy. That's ahead in 3 minutes. You're listening to Simply Money tonight here on 55KRC, the talk station. You're listening to Simply Money. I'm Amy Wagner along with Steve Strovac. How many times do you get food delivered to your house a week? Well, your next delivery, it may not come via car, but a drone. Listen to this. Kroger testing drone delivery, and they say the technology could deliver groceries, anything under 5 pounds, in as little as 15 minutes. I think this is a game changer, Steve.
Oh, it's going to be pretty awesome. And you know where they're rolling this out? Right here in Centerville.
Yep.
So I don't know what the range is going to be for that drone, but we got to try it. I mean, they're very limited in what they're telling us can be delivered other than 5 pounds or less. By the way, I did a little research. Six-pack of beer, just under 5 pounds.
I love
it. Half gallon of margarita mix, just under 5 pounds.
So we're good with this.
Yeah, I mean,
you're having a really crappy day, right? Whatever it is, the show didn't go well. I stepped on you while you were talking, and you're like, I just need, man, that drone is going to drop the six-pack off.
There you go. On its way.
Yeah, exactly. It's interesting because Kroger says this is not going to be like your meal delivery service, right? But this is what I inevitably do. I promise the family a meal, and then I get home and I forgot one thing that I needed, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's taco night and I forgot the ground beef or whatever it is. This is the kind of thing that can revolutionize that. And they even say you're at a neighbor's house and you guys are doing a cookout and you realize you're supposed to bring barbecue sauce or something, you don't have it. It tracks where your phone is, so it doesn't need to come to your house. So wherever you are in the middle of the field, on a beach, and you need sunscreen, it's coming to you.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great concept on paper, and obviously the press release did not use my margarita and six-pack of beer analogy.
I don't know why.
But you know, it's going to be tested, you know, with those things
exactly.
in mind. So, you know, I have a lot of questions. You know, what's going to happen if you are in an area, you know, if you're in an apartment complex? Where do they drop it? You know, and you know, it's going to be interesting to see how they work all of these things out. How high does the drone go? You know, I'm a pilot, and, you know, does it go up to where I fly? Or are these going to
be... That is a serious consideration.
Yeah, are these going to be problems? What if a neighbor sees a drone hovering next door and thinks it's something spying on them? You know, so this is a game changer. This is a big change in the way we shop and the way we have things delivered to us. If it works, and I'm sure they'll work out the bugs, like you said, it's a game changer. It's going to be really interesting to see how this plays out.
Yeah, so testing it in Centerville right now, and I think the second market is California. And then beyond that, like, we'll see. It could be rolling out. I mean, the thing about Kroger is they test something, they usually work out the kinks pretty quickly, and it comes to market not long after that testing. So who knows, within the next year or so, you may be getting drone deliveries to your door. I think it's crazy, and I think it's pretty awesome, too. All right, so if your kids are on social media, they are likely on TikTok. My oldest is
yours
on TikTok.
Do TikTok? I wouldn't know where to start. I really wouldn't.
Well, here's the thing. It started with, like, crazy music videos, but now all advice seems to be dispensed via TikTok. And my daughter, I noticed, she's a freshman in high school, takes that advice as absolute fact. And what we want to warn you about tonight is, if you have kids or grandkids on this platform, there are people that are starting to sell financial products, financial information via TikTok, that it is not fact. It is not good information. And our concern is your kids are going to take this as fact and go and make investments accordingly.
Hey, Amy, this is the part that just blows me away. I mean, a survey says 41% of Generation Zers, those that were born in 1997 up until a few years ago, that they're getting their investment information from TikTok. Yeah. And these are short little snippets, and this is just ripe for abuse. I mean, there are a lot of regulations in our industry, as there should be, and I see nothing on TikTok that says, hey, you know, past performance is no guarantee of future returns. And, you know, the normal gobble. No, this is, hey, this is great. You should buy it. And that's not good. That's not good. I don't know why people are going to places like TikTok to get financial advice. But, you know, the kids that age, they're not going to listen to a guy like me, probably. But please stop. This is dangerous.
They're getting all of their information from TikTok, right? So it's not just financial information. It's just that people have realized, okay, if they're getting all their all of their information from TikTok, we're going to slide some financial stuff in there and see if they bite. And here's a quote from a 25-year-old who's on TikTok. And she says, you know what? I love TikTok because it doesn't make me feel bad if I buy Starbucks once a month. And I would flip that around and I would say, what TikTok does is make you feel bad if you don't get Starbucks at least once or because so it makes you see other people consume it. You see them putting their, you know, stupid fancy drinks on there or whatever. And my daughter is always asking for coffee drinks now. And I'm like, I don't understand. What is the deal? It goes back to TikTok. And so it's this constant consumption. You want all the things that other people have. And we know even the wisest investors can sometimes look at other people and have FOMO, right? What's the return you say you got on that? Okay, so put this in the hands of teenagers, 20-year-olds, 31-year-olds, whatever, who maybe aren't as savvy in investing, and there are products that are, and we even saw one of them on there saying, listen, if you have $150,000, which most of these people don't, but if you do, the best place to invest it is a variable annuity.
Oh, boy. Okay. You know we're going to have a problem with first of all, you can't just say to everybody, here's the best investment for you. Everybody's different. You know, I mean, everything about what we're talking about here is dangerous. It really is. And if it looks like and it sounds like I'm getting worked up, it's because I am. One of the worst issues I've got with social media is it doesn't say, okay, you looked at this. Now, here's something different so you can compare and contrast. No, the algorithms are written so if you happen to pull up a risky investment, since we're talking about investments, it's going to feed you more risky investments. Yeah. The algorithm is going to say, you like that, you're going to like these, and leads you down a path of financial destruction. I mean, it's not good.
And these videos are not 3-minute videos, right? I mean, 3 minutes would be amazing. These are super short. So there's just a quick claim and then nothing behind it. So if they're talking about annuities, no one's talking about commissions, right? And if they're talking about this
conflicts
thing that got
interest.
This return, absolutely. So make sure you're having these conversations with your kids. We think this is so important. The information that's on there, the financial information, is often not factual, and they need to find other sources. resources and you can direct them in the right direction of where those are. Simply Money Point, your kids are getting some terrible financial advice on TikTok. Talk to them about what they need to be investing in. If you need some help budgeting your summer getaway, that's ahead at 6:34. You're listening to Simply Money tonight here on 55 KRC, the talk station. You're listening to Simply Money tonight. I'm Amy Wagner along with Steve Sprovac. How long has it been since you traveled? We know that for so many of you, the vacation is booked. You're ready to get back out there again. Also, though, there's a lot of pent-up demand in the spending. And so there's some concern that some of us might go a little overboard on those vacations. Joining us tonight to make sure, no, we keep our spending in check, Al Riddick, founder and president of Game Time Budgeting. Al, what are some simple steps? Because I think, man, we are all ready to get back out there again. And I think because of that demand, traveling in and of itself is going to be more expensive.
You are correct. The price of travel is going up, but some of the tips that we can do to make sure that we don't break the bank, first of all, and I know people don't want to hear this word, but you have to create a travel budget, Amy. I know that we do have a lot of pent-up demand right now just because of the coronavirus, but you have to keep in mind that the money that you spend today, it's gone forever, and forever is a very long time. So when it comes to that travel budget, keep in mind you have transportation, you might have a rental car, that car might need some gasoline, then you may have parking at the airport, of course you need food, lodging, and then sometimes you might want to pick up some little trinkets as well. So keep in mind that there is nothing wrong with creating a travel budget. But in addition to that, Amy, I'm sure you've heard the phrase, people are always instructed us to save for a rainy day. What's wrong with saving for a sunny day? So if you have never created a vacation savings account, what better year to start doing that than right now? Because obviously most people will want to take more vacations throughout the rest of their lives. Why not go ahead and set the money aside just a little bit every month so that when you get that itch to take a vacation to your favorite destination, it's not a matter of being stressed out about the cost of it, because all you'll do is look in your vacation savings account and transfer the money when the bill comes.
Al, I think that's such a great point, because we are huge proponents at Allworth into saving for something, right? So you're not going into debt on the backside of that vacation. At the same time, I got to tell you, when I travel, I like to have at least one drink by the pool every day, and we know those drinks are not cheap. So we're not necessarily saying you can't travel, you can't enjoy yourself. We're simply saying, hey, plan ahead a little bit and make sure that the money is there so you're not stressed out about it after you get back from the trip.
Exactly. And Amy, I have to make a concession with you right now. So because of the pandemic, obviously my wife and I, we have stayed true to our commitment of making contributions to our vacation savings account month after month after month. And
wow,
we haven't taken a trip since December of 2019. So our anniversary is coming up in August. And we did something that is so out of character for us, Amy. We booked first-class tickets to Hawaii, but when we thought about it, we were like, you know what? We do such a great job of hitting all of our financial goals. Is there anything really wrong with wanting to splurge every now and then? Because obviously the money was in the account, and when we looked at the flying time, layovers, and things of that nature, we were like, you know what? We can afford it, and if we want to do it, why not pull the trigger?
This is breaking news. Al Riddick is flying first class. I feel like we should have led with this tonight, Al.
But to your point...
You make smart financial decisions and you reward yourself, because I think that so many people look at anything money-wise like a diet, like it's punishment. And it's not a diet. It's really a lifestyle decision that actually gives you so much more freedom. So I think, you know, giving yourself some treats while you're on vacation, if you can afford that, is a fantastic way to celebrate that.
Definitely. And at the end of the day, of course, that is the first time I've ever purchased a first class ticket, but I've flown first class quite a few times just because we got the free upgrade, so to speak.
Oh, but yes.
I feel so comfortable in that decision because, like you said, you know, we live a very financially responsible life pretty much 99.9% of the time. So what's wrong with rewarding yourself? Because all it does is light that fire for you to stay the course and stay diligent about the financial goals you set for yourself. It's just that easy.
Yeah. You know, I think, Al, too, though, you can plan. Best laid plans often go awry. There are some surprises that usually always pop up when you're on a trip. How do you plan for those?
So for those surprises that usually pop up, one of the things that I always tell people, first of all, keep some cash on hand. So when I say surprises, I don't know if a lot of people have this custom, but, you know, my wife and I, we always like to tip like the maid service and baggage attendants, bartenders and things of that nature. So keep cash on hand. Secondly, and this is going to be a huge surprise for a lot of people, when it comes to rental cars, first of all, before you book that flight, make sure that there is a car available. When the pandemic hit, a lot of these rental car companies, they actually got rid of a lot of their inventory. So right now, you don't have that many cars available for the general public. So what does that mean? Obviously, low supply means higher cost because that's just how basic economics work. So think about the fact that your travel is going to cost you more money. And then also, when you check into your room, even though, Amy, I know you like to have the drink by the pool, stay away from the mini bar because everything inside that refrigerator or mini bar is totally overpriced. And it's just not a good use of your money.
That's a great point. And truly, though, the vacation, when it's over, there are some other things that you can do when it comes to travel. What do you say you do on the backside of those summer getaways?
On the backside of the vacation, depending on how many you take, and I would think the average family takes at least one vacation per year.
Yeah.
As soon as you come home, the smartest thing you can start doing is saving for the next vacation.
Yes.
And keep in mind, let's say you average one vacation every May. So next May of 2022, what if you already were putting maybe $250, $300, $350 away every month in your vacation account? That way, when it's time to take the trip, you aren't stressed and you can have a more pleasant and pleasurable experience because you know you aren't going into debt to finance funds.
Al, do you have any concerns? You know, and a lot of people got stimulus checks during this time, and we just couldn't spend money the way that we did before. At one point during this pandemic, the personal savings rate in the United States was like 30%+, which is amazing. Do you have concerns, though, that now that people are getting vaccinated, going out there to spend again, that there's this pent-up demand, that people will just go crazy?
I do have a concern, and that 33%, Amy, according to the Bureau of Economic Analysis, that was back in April of 2020. Yeah. But I have noticed, because I track these things, the savings rate has been consistently dropping ever since then.
Of course.
So what we already know is happening, you know how everybody wanted to go back to what they considered normal? My fear is that we are going back to our normally low savings rate in America, which will be to the devastation of so many households in this country. But I was hoping that people would learn a couple of things by going through the pandemic. First of all, I learned that I have so much excess stuff in my life. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I also learned that it doesn't take that many things to make me happy. And when I say happy, I just mean the basic necessities of life. So my fear is that people will go back to normal and start overspending just to enjoy very small experiences, so to speak, without realizing that you have to prepare for your future life.
Great advice, great insight tonight. If you are getting out there again this summer to travel, make sure that you plan for it, that you budget for it. It will be so much more enjoyable while you're there. And then when you get back, you start saving for the next one. Al Riddick is founder and president of Game Time Budgeting, a regular here on the show. You're listening to Simply Money tonight here on 55 KRC, the talk station. You're listening to Simply Money. I'm Amy Wagner along with Steve Sprovac. Chip shortage, you may have heard about it, but did you know it might be affecting your wallet? We'll dig into why that is. That's ahead at 6:53. The federal government rushed to dole out unemployment benefits at the height of the pandemic, and we've always said this. If there's a huge government plan that is trying to do something quickly, you can bet there are going to be issues. And now there are. We're finding that many of those in line weren't exactly honest about needing those benefits.
Amy, these are big numbers. I mean, the U.S. Labor Department's Office of Inspector General last month estimated at least 10%. Now, if they're saying at least 10%, they're suspecting a lot more. And 10%.
Yeah.
Of an $896 billion program is almost $90 billion. I mean, these are big numbers. I think it's gotten to the point with all of these government programs coming out that you've got the bad guys just waiting to hear, okay, how's it going to be structured? What's the best way to beat it? All right, let's go in and let's start filing our claims or whatever they're doing fraudulently.
Without a doubt.
Yeah,
it's probably 30 seconds after the announcement has made by the federal government that they are already like, how can I use this to my advantage? And here's what the government is saying right now. They're only saying that it may have been paid improperly, right? They're not going to go so far as to call it fraud, but a large part of that we can assume is likely because of fraud. And here's the problem. It's the same with the IRS. They've had these all of these things that they have to do. And when you look at the stimulus money, the stimulus money and the unemployment money that came from that, it had to get to people so quickly.
Yeah.
And then they've got understaffed employment offices. When you look at these offices, and I don't think anyone paid attention to this until last year, some of them are working in the dark ages still.
Yeah, you know, they call it unintended consequences, but it's really just not thinking it through. You put together a massive government program and rampant identity theft, understaffed bureaucrats, and what can go wrong? Yeah, you know, I mean, even the director of fraud prevention for AARP has said the personal information of every adult in the United States has probably already been compromised. Just chew on that a little bit.
Yeah.
In other words, your stuff is out there. Just accept that. You know, so if ID theft has already doubled to 1.4 million reported between 2019 and 2020, you just assume, okay, people are doing something with my social security number. I don't know what until I file for something and I can't get it because they said you already did. This is not good.
No. And for a lot of these people, they're going to file for your benefits and you're working and you're not going to have any idea. You may not ever know.
Probably wouldn't know.
Except that for business owners, they're starting to see the impact of this. Some small businesses say, listen, we somehow limped through this entire pandemic. We were able to not lay off a single person. And now we're looking at 200, 300% increases in our unemployment insurance costs.
Yeah. And they're told, don't worry about it. Unemployment will take care of it. Nothing will happen to you as a business owner. That's just got to be a brutal increase when you're barely scraping by with, you know, in some states are still 20-30% capacity. I was out with a friend over the weekend at a wedding, and we were in Charleston, South Carolina for the wedding, and he's from New Jersey, and we were sitting in a restaurant where they had an oyster bar, and you can sit at the bar, and he just kept shaking his head. I can't believe people are allowed to sit at the bar. And I said, what do you mean? And he said, you can't do that. They rope it off in New Jersey. You've got these restaurants in very large states that are barely scraping by, and then a doubling or tripling because of fraud, how much you have to pay into unemployment insurance. This is going to be the death knell for some of these places that did the right thing, and now they're paying the price because of all the fraud.
So if you somehow find out, right, that you have been the victim of it and someone is filing claims in your name, you have to report it. Let the government find out about this. Identitytheft.gov tracks these things and provides help to you as a consumer. So make sure you're not like, oh, there's nothing I can do about it. It's really not affecting my bank account. You have to understand your information, it's like pieces of a puzzle. And once they can put the whole thing together, they can do all kinds of damage. We have always been huge proponents of locking your credit, freezing
your put
credit.
A freeze on it. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. I mean, it's a pain in the neck. You've got to actually take some proactive steps. Yeah, you have to contact the credit reporting agencies. And if you need to apply for a credit card or a loan, you have to unfreeze it. But you know what? That's a small price to pay to keep someone, or at least really reduce the possibility of somebody stealing your identity.
Here's the Simply Money point. This warning tonight, check for fake unemployment benefits in your name. They may be hurting small businesses, and they also may be hurting your credit. So you've heard about the global chip shortage, but how is it affecting your wallet? That's ahead in 3 minutes. You're listening to Simply Money tonight here on 55KRC, the talk station. You're listening to Simply Money. I'm Amy Wagner, along with Steve Sprovac. Maybe you've heard about this, a global chip shortage. And this is a big economic problem, and it might be affecting your wallet. And let's talk about what companies we're talking about here, Steve, because this touches a little bit of everything.
It does. And you know, it's really crushing some of the car companies. I mean, Ford, maker of the best-selling vehicle in America, has to cut second quarter production by half. I mean, you know, this is a really big deal. I've got a son who works for Toyota. He's an engineer, and I was talking to him about this. I said, this is all over. I mean, it's not just the auto industry, but it's appliances. It's everything.
Heavy equipment.
Yeah.
All kinds of things.
I asked him, what's causing this? And it was really interesting, and I researched it, and he's dead on. It's a confluence of a bunch of things, but it's primarily, yeah, we were in a pandemic, and guess what? People bought a lot of video games, and the same chips that go into cars go into video games. So the production, you know, there were some minor issues with production of chips, but it's really, no, they're blowing them out to these video consoles, and there aren't enough left over for some auto companies and some appliance manufacturers. It'll get back on track, but right now it's a major problem.
In of themselves, they're not super expensive.
No.
Like,
no.
These semiconductors can cost less than a can of soda, but they're used in 12% of U.S. gross domestic product. Like, so many components of, I'm sure, phones and everything are run by these. And so what they've said is it can boost prices for some of those categories by as much as 3%. You add on to, you know, other additional costs that we're seeing with supply chain issues, and that can really add up right now to the point where Costco is saying, hey, there's some things that you have traditionally walked through our doors expecting to find here that you may not find moving forward.
Yeah, exactly. And again, the problem is going to be solved. I know there's at least four factories for building chips being built right now in the United States. They'll be online over the next year or two, but they're not online right now. So the problem is being addressed. But in the meantime, if you want a new appliance, if you need a new car, don't be surprised if they say, we can't get it for another month.
Yeah. TVs, computers, all of those Internet of Things, anything that's connected, those home gadgets that you have, all of them require these specific chips. And they're difficult to get right now. So if you're in the market for any of those things, usually it would be, man, you just leave your house or you get on Amazon and it's no big deal. You can either expect to pay more or you can expect to wait longer to get that thing.
Yeah, you know what's interesting is if you've been looking for a used car, and I've helped a couple of people try to find them, the prices are crazy. I mean,
oh, my God. Gosh,
the average, the average price of a used car has gone from $12,000 to $17,000, and just go online and take a look at them. Why? Because if you can't get a new car, you're going to look for a used car, and it's supply and demand like anything else.
Coming out of this pandemic, right, we've seen companies already making great strides, but there are going to be hiccups like this one that will have an impact on certain things that probably all of us need. So keep an eye out on this one. You've been listening to Simply Money tonight here on 55KRC, the talk station.